From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is beginning its next review of polar bear status under the Endangered Species Act. The review happens every 5 years, and it could result in polar bears being uplisted to endangered. Aaron Knoll, the Threatened and Endangered Species Coordinator for the Fish and Wildlife Service's Alaska region, says polar bears listing as threatened already affords them many protections under the Endangered Species Act, and there are protections under other laws, too. But she says those only go so far. That's because, as the initial 2008 listing decision notes, the melting of the polar bear sea ice habitat due to human-induced climate change is their main threat.
Under the Endangered Species Act, we don't have the authority to regulate those greenhouse gas emissions. And similarly, in the listing rule, we noted that there wasn't a regulation at the national or international level that directly and effectively address the primary threat to polar bears, which is that range-wide loss of sea ice habitat.
Knoll says that while the polar bear status as a threatened species often draws a lot of attention, it's too early to say what recommendations might come out of the review or what implications they might have. As part of the review, Knoll says that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is looking for any new research on polar bears since the last review in 2017, including about their habitat or threats they face. She says any recommendations based on the review will then go through a public comment period. Federal aviation regulators have announced some recommendations to make flying in Alaska safer. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, it's an attempt to address Alaska's outsized share of crashes, but the agency is stopping short of imposing new safety rules on the industry.
There have been at least 21 people killed in plane crashes in the Ketchikan area alone since 2015. So the Federal Aviation Administration has been expected to roll out some safety improvements ever since federal crash investigators convened a roundtable meeting on Alaska air charter safety back in 2019. First on the list of recommendations is adding to and improving the FAA's network of weather stations to offer real-time data to pilots.
When I was in flight school, I'd fly from Vero Beach to Savannah, Georgia for some sweet tea and pecan pie, and it's about 270 miles, and you have no less than 15 weather reporting stations.
That's Lee Ryan, whose Ryan Air serves more than 70 small Alaska communities.
When I go home to Unalakleet, Anchorage to Unalakleet, it's about 340 miles, you have 4 weather reporting stations in that distance.
Another recommendation to the FAA is to encourage carriers to equip their planes with an early warning system to prevent mid-air collisions and other types of crashes. The technology, known as Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, or ADS-B, transmits info about the plane's position, altitude, and speed to nearby aircraft, along with ground stations and satellites. But the FAA stopped short of a rule that would require carriers to install the systems. One of the FAA's lawyers on the line, Howard Martin, says new regulations were outside the scope of the initiative.
This was not a rulemaking process, so it went outside of our charter, what we were supposed to do. Those recommendations would be handled through a separate process.
And that means the FAA's recommendations don't include two big priorities long pushed for by the National Transportation Safety Board, which investigates crashes. Those include safety management systems, they're essentially risk management protocols for airlines, and data recording devices for all planes that carry paying passengers. Congressman Don Young, who was on the FAA call with reporters, said he's glad to see regulators in the industry come out with practical recommendations.
You came to the table with ideas. I go through this life with everybody, not everybody, a lot of people bitching, don't have any suggestions. And you came forth with some good suggestions, put them together, and you have made a good report present to the general public and to the Congress.
He encouraged the FAA to request additional funding for Alaska safety upgrades in the president's next budget. FAA Administrator Steve Dixon told reporters Thursday that Alaska is unique in that many communities aren't served by roads year-round.
Now, because of this partnership and this collaboration, we have a set of thoughtful, specific recommendations about how to improve safety in the state, where more than 80% of communities are accessible only by air travel.
Absent from the rollout was the Transportation Safety Board, which investigates crashes. In a statement, NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy called the FAA's recommendations a step forward, but she said there's still more improvements to be done for Alaska. The FAA says it's addressing some of the NTSB's remaining top recommendations in a separate process. The FAA is slated to propose new rules for charter and air tour operators next fall, according to a notice in the Federal Register. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Voter turnout in local Kenai Peninsula elections was really low this fall. But there's one competition in Alaska that saw its highest voter turnout ever. That's probably because its contestants are 1,000-pound brown bears. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the story.
Mike Fitz is the resident naturalist with Explore.org, one of the organizations that puts on Fat Bear Week. He says almost 800,000 people voted this year as their favorite bears at Katmai National Park packed on the pounds for winter. Over 100,000 more voters than last year.
That means that more people are, at least for a day or a moment, considering, you know, the stories of some of the bears that use Brooks River. And hopefully they're also taking another moment to think about why bears get fat to survive, how they do it, and thinking about the ecosystem that supports them.
This year's Fat Bear Week champion was 480 Otis. Otis has won the competition before, but his is still a bit of an underdog story. He's older than a lot of his river mates, and he's missing two canines. This year, he came out to Brooks River late.
But he stuck to his plan. His plan is to go to the waterfall and wait for his opportunities to fish in his preferred fishing spots, really try to avoid, confrontations with the more dominant bears. And once those opportunities open, he goes to his spot, he sits, he waits for the fish to come to him. So he is really a master of energy economics.
Otis captured the hearts of viewers who hail from all over the world. Katmai National Park on the Alaska Peninsula is no quick trip for most, but the bear cams at Brooks Falls bring viewers right to the scene of the feast. Fitz says beyond the bears, the week also broadens viewers' awareness of the ecology of the region. He says he knows of some who have weighed in on the Pebble Mine project, and he says the success of bears like Otis is a testament to the great salmon returns in the Bristol Bay watershed.
And the bears are, I think, maybe the most conspicuous sort of benefactors of that.
It's a message Fitz hopes viewers take away long after Fat Bear Week has crowned its king. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
An unusual bird was sighted in the Yukon Flats village of Chalkeetsik recently. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the raptor, uncommon to the state, has also been spotted in a few other Alaska locations.
Chalkeetsik resident Kyle Joseph says his uncle told him about seeing a strange-looking bird.
That there was a weird eagle flying around and had a red beak, and I was like, oh, okay.
Joseph says he later spotted the bird while helping his aunt cut firewood.
It flew by. And it was nothing like I had ever seen.
Joseph says the bird landed on a cache and he was able to get close.
I slowly walked up to it and took a picture of it and was like, what the heck? And then I looked it up and it was a turkey vulture.
Turkey vultures survive on carrion, and Joseph suspects the bird was drawn in by a pile of moose meat scraps.
Looks like somebody had dumped their waste back near the lake for the crows and stuff. And like it would just fly over there, pick up a little chunk of meat, and then fly up into the trees.
Joseph says he posted about the sighting on Facebook and has received a lot of comments.
Because nobody's ever seen a vulture in our area before.
They're bright, red, featherless heads. You just can't mistake them for anything else.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service migratory bird biologist Jim Johnson says the Chalkeetsik vulture sighting was preceded by a sighting earlier this year in the northwest Alaska village of Noatak and later in Juneau, as well as a few earlier year observations as far north as Utqiagvik. Johnson says although the bird's normal range only extends to southern Canada, turkey vultures are migratory raptors built to fly long distances.
They're really fascinating birds. They weigh about 3 pounds and have 6-foot wingspans, which enables them to ride thermals or rising warm air, and it's not unusual for a bird to be able to travel 100 to 200 miles per day just without flapping, just soaring.
Predisposed to marathon travel in search of carrion, Johnson suspects the turkey vultures spotted in Alaska follow geographic corridors north.
Entering our state via, large river systems or following the slopes of large mountain ranges like the Alaska Range.
Johnson says there is broader evidence that the nomadic turkey vulture is expanding northward, adding that Alaska is a place where migratory birds often show up outside their normal ranges.
Alaska is really a nexus for birds from all over the world.
Johnson notes that there are hundreds of birds uncommon to Alaska that sporadically show up in the state, but many less distinctive species go unnoticed. He applauds observers like Kyle Joseph of Chalkeetsuk for taking a picture of the turkey vulture and sharing it. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
This is KTOO News.